It's 5:06, and you're listening to Central Time here in the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Cynthia Schuster, filling in for Veronica Rickert. Thank you for your support during our year-end mini-pledge drive. 1,100 of you pledged $156,000, and we're so grateful for your financial support.
If you haven't pledged yet, you can still help with a year-end gift. Go to WPR.org. That's WPR.org, and it'll take you through making that donation. Still coming up today on Central Time, a look at news on chronic wasting disease in Wisconsin deer.
First, a related topic. A new report outlines the threat that climate change could pose for deer, moose, elk, caribou, and other large mammals.
The report is from the National Wildlife Federation. It's called Nowhere to Run: Big Game Wildlife in a Warming World. Ryan Stockwell joins us now. He's Senior Agriculture Program Manager for the National Wildlife Federation. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Rob.
So first, give us a rundown of the range of species that you're looking at in this report.
So this report looked at a number of big game species across the North American continent. So that would include whitetail deer that we're all familiar with, as well as blacktail deer, moose, caribou, as well as bear and antelope.
And a lot of these stories, there's backstory here, there were success stories in the past. Can you talk about the restoration effort that brought them back to where they are today?
Certainly. So if we go back in time and take a look at settlement across the continent, we'll see that as that settlement occurred, wildlife species, and particularly big game species, their populations declined precipitously for a number of reasons, predominantly because there was such a tremendous interest in hunting and killing off a lot of these species. However, at the turn of the 20th century and into about the 1930s, we started developing a scientific awareness of the importance of a lot of these species. And so efforts began to develop to protect these species, to bring their populations back up to more manageable and sustainable levels so that it did not have those low populations did not have detrimental effects on the entire ecosystems in which they operate. And a number of those species were brought back from the brink of extinction all the way back to more manageable and sustainable levels.
And Wisconsin had a role there. Aldo Leopold was one of the people who helped that restoration, right?
That's correct. He was helped in a lot of the science and management for ecosystems and big game management, and he played a significant role in guiding the direction of how to implement a lot of these plans to ensure that we have and continue to have big game.
How important for our economies are these species when we factor in not just the hunting, but also tourism related to them, photography?
Certainly. So big game species across the continent, in 2011, some of our most recent data, we had about 16 million adult aged hunters going after big game, and that contributed over $16 billion to the economy. And then when you add in the other components of enjoying big game, of just observing and photography, that number in terms of economic impact more than doubles.
So this is of interest to hunters and non-hunters?
Exactly. This is a significant hobby that, in fact, we have more people who participate in the observation and photography of big game than hunting.
Well, let's look at the problem you're seeing now. We'll delve into details and species by species, but overall, how is climate change affecting these large mammals in the United States?
So the significant direction, if we can try to generalize here for a second, the significant direction that climate change and significant impact that climate change has on these big species is by shifting weather patterns and shifting then habitats, which respond to changes in climate over time. And then we can get into more specifics, but the additional factor is that as these climates change, that also changes then pests as well as predators for these species, which when they're not acclimated to these changing conditions, they do not fare very well.
And let's pursue one of those. Now, white-tailed deer is not an animal a lot of people would think of as threatened in any way. In some places, they're seen as a nuisance animal. But one of the disease issues that you're looking at, you're worried in the long run. Talk about disease that affects deer here in Wisconsin and in our neighboring states.
Certainly. So the disease that has been cropping up as climate change has taken a hold is hemorrhagic disease. And that is essentially a disease passed on among deer by midges, or real small biting flies. And this disease then causes deer to bleed out internally or externally. They become more susceptible to other diseases and die off. And a good example of what we will likely see with further climate change actually happened back in 2012. During that year, which most of you will recall was a significant drought year, we saw in that situation deer will tend to congregate at watering holes that are remaining. And so their opportunities to spread out and get water at different locations declines, and so they need to congregate, and then they become more susceptible to the midges, which also are at these watering holes. In 2012, a number of Midwestern states experienced a tremendous rise in the incidence of hemorrhagic disease, going from Nebraska, which saw an estimated 10 to 15,000 loss in deer population due to the disease. Missouri, same numbers. Even Michigan, much closer to Wisconsin, saw similar impacts of this disease of losing a significant portion of the deer population. In each of these circumstances, that resulted in the state game management deciding to limit hunting opportunities by reducing the tag numbers being allotted. And so that certainly has implications for, as we talked about earlier, the economy, but also for the opportunity for sportsmen and women to enjoy the opportunity to hunt these species.
So is that an example of a fairly common story, a combination of something carrying a disease, maybe expanding its range, an annual condition, something like a drought, making the animals, the big game animals, behave in a way they don't usually do, maybe congregating like the deer did, and that's kind of perfect storm, making these diseases more likely?
Exactly. Some species are more adept at managing climate change and dealing with changing conditions than others are. And typically our big game are very slow to adapt to these changes. However, the insects and the parasites are fairly quick at adapting to these changing conditions. And so they get a leg up during these times of change. And that's the case with the midges with the hemorrhagic disease, and that's also the case with deer ticks and Lyme disease, which impacts not just big game species, but also human populations as well.
We also have elk being restored over time here in Wisconsin. How are they faring in your report?
Elk, in a similar situation, or elk are a little bit different in that our report looks at elk more in the western populations where they're more commonly known to reside. In those situations, what we've seen is that in addition to climate change, which has, again, with droughts and these long-term weather patterns impacted by climate change, which reduce the habitat value for the elk, we're also seeing a lot of oil and gas development, which fragments their habitats. And that creates tremendous difficulty for migration and for maintaining those populations.
We're talking to Ryan Stockwell with the National Wildlife Federation about a new report on big game species in the United States and threats they face because of climate change.
And we want to hear from you. Do you have a question about how this affects deer, elk, caribou, black bear, other large mammals? If you're a hunter, are you worried about what you're hearing? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org.
Now we'll continue our conversation about moose, elk, deer, caribou, black bears, other big mammals in the United States, and how climate change might affect them. Ryan Stockwell is with us to talk about a new report from the National National Wildlife Federation. You can join in with your thoughts and your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Are you someone who goes on tours to see these kind of animals? Deer, obviously, we see here in Wisconsin, but have you gone out to see caribou, elk herds? Or are you a hunter of those kinds of animals? Are you concerned about this? You can join in at 800-642-1234. Well, Ryan, some animals that might be more exotic for us here in Wisconsin I want to get into. Pronghorn sheep. What does the report tell us about them?
So the report for pronghorn is very similar to elk and mule deer in the western portions of the continent, in that in combination with the drought, which has an impact on their sage habitat area, reducing the vegetation, we're also again seeing a lot of habitat fragmentation due to oil and gas development. And that fragmentation then minimizes their migratory patterns, which are necessary for their survival, and at the same time also tends to congregate their populations more densely. In that situation, what we see is an increasing likeliness that diseases will spread more quickly through the pronghorn population.
So we've sampled a few of the animals you talk about in the report, and maybe we'll get to some more, but I don't want to let the time get away without asking you, what are your recommendations? Are there specific things to help these species, or is this a matter of big picture stuff on climate change?
It's really a combination of the two. So our first recommendation, obviously, is to address climate change, to find solutions and begin to address the root problem of what we see going on with big game. But secondly, there are some specifics that we can implement, and first and foremost is to minimize habitat fragmentation. So while climate change continues to go on, we need to learn to adapt to that and also to preserve as much opportunity for wildlife to maintain their populations as possible. And so first and foremost would be minimizing the amount of fragmentation going on. And secondly would be to bring in more science to find strategies to for our management, to change our management strategies to adapt, help big game adapt to this changing climate scenario.
All right. Edward from Pole County, Wisconsin, says he does deer processing in northwestern Wisconsin. A lot of the avid hunters, he tells us, are avid Republicans, don't believe in global warming. He asks, how do you get the message out to these people about what's happening to the deer and these other species?
Well, I'm also a hunter, and I'm in Taylor County, so he's not too far from me. And I have similar concerns about deer populations. You know, it's always anytime talking about climate change can be a touchy subject. But one thing that is for certain is that our deer populations that we all enjoy to go out and hunt and observe are facing some real and significant difficulties. And we need to find ways and need to be smart managers about ensuring their populations so that we can enjoy them as outdoor sportsmen and women, so also future generations can enjoy them.
And in the initial response to your report, are you hearing from, say, hunters, organizations, sportsmen groups wanting to get on board with this?
Absolutely. We have received some good initial interest from a number of organizations that this report fits into the thinking that good, sound management of big game is necessary to ensure our long-term opportunities, that we have worked so hard to bring these big game back into conservation numbers so that we can enjoy them. It would be a tremendous shame to just let that fall away because we're not willing to recognize and address the climate change challenges facing these big game.
We'll go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. That's the number to call if you want to join in, 800-642-1234. We have Roger with us in Montello. Roger, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to bring up?
Thank you for taking my call. You mentioned that Michigan and Nebraska had significant midge hemorrhagic disease. Well, I'm here to tell you that Aaron Joseph found 25 deer down by Kiganza that were dead, And Paul Check, by Poinette, found 25 to 30 deer that were dead. My son took a walk in 2012 squirrel hunting and found 3 deer, and he was out for about an hour and a half. We had a significant kill here in the southern part of the state of Wisconsin with a hemorrhagic disease, and they were mainly bucks. My comment, I'll let you just continue. You seem to be covering a lot of bases. I'll listen. Bye.
But thanks a lot for the call, Roger. So, Ryan, I think you mentioned that the hemorrhagic disease among deer had been spotted in Wisconsin. Is it as wide-ranging as Roger is mentioning?
It is exactly as Roger mentioned it, that hemorrhagic disease is spreading north into Wisconsin. We had, as he mentioned, this year we have some incidences of it. Last year during the drought, and again, as we mentioned, the incidence of that increases with drought. We had higher numbers still last year, and we just have to go back a few years to 2002. That was the first outbreak of hemorrhagic disease in Wisconsin. So this is a very new and very serious problem that will only continue to grow without addressing some of the root issues.
Another species, not here in Wisconsin, but very close to our borders, and we've talked about this a little on the show, a moose. I know trouble in Minnesota's moose populations in the western and northeastern parts of the state. Can you talk about them a little?
Certainly. What we have found is that moose, being such a large animal, are quite sensitive to small changes in temperature. And also, moose being very acclimated and built for cold climates, and with Minnesota being their very southernmost region and territory, they're going to feel the brunt of climate change the earliest and the first. And so what we've seen with the moose populations in both the northwest portion as well as the northeast is significant declines very recently over the last 10 or 12 years. And this is to the point that that they ended hunting of moose in the northwest portion of Minnesota back in 1997. And just this year, in 2013, they canceled the moose season because of rapid declines in moose populations.
So one question, why don't animals, wouldn't animals just start ranging further north if there's a general increase in temperatures, or is it not that simple?
Unfortunately, it's not that simple. Animals have a difficult time sensing these very small changes. And then secondly, to recognize a solution to such wide-ranging and large problems. One can only imagine in their mind that if they're recognizing that it's getting warm out, their assumption is it's warm out everywhere rather than trying to trend north. So it takes a very long-term process for wildlife to respond to this, and oftentimes it's not accomplished by a single generation, but just purely by selection of populations to the north and colder areas perhaps having a little more chance of survival and southern populations dying out.
Well, and I suppose part of the problem is that it isn't so much a steady increase in temperature as a steady increase in unpredictability. Maybe an extreme drought this year, flooding the next, early frost one year and late frost another.
Exactly. And in 2012, you know, we just about saw all of that from early spring to a late frost, then to a drought, to a long fall. And it just, these problems compound one another. And wildlife really have nowhere to, no easy sense of recognizing what the problem is or how to deal with it.
There's been talk lately, various scientists saying we're past a tipping point with climate change. The best we can do is limit the impact, but we're pretty much riding the roller coaster in that direction, and there's no going back. How do you feel? Are you optimistic about these species that you're talking about, elk, moose, caribou, and deer, in the face of climate change?
I am optimistic. I think if we get down to business and recognize the need to do what we can to protect their existing habitat, especially some of the core areas of habitat that are vital and valuable to these species, minimize the fragmentation of habitat that we see going on throughout the continent, and then implement sound science to address these climate issues and address diseases as they arrive, we are going to have a good success at maintaining these valuable big game populations.
We'll leave it there. Ryan, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Ryan Stockwell. He's with the National Wildlife Federation talking about a new report on large mammals, big game species in the United States.